Welcome to Show and Tell with the Two Mortgage Guys. We come to you live every Tuesday on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and LinkedIn at noon. Today, we've got Amy Pate, Executive Vice President of the Realtors Association of Central Indiana. She's going to be talking to us today about some of the information you might have with how realtors get paid, some horror stories in the real estate industry, and maybe a couple things about the Two Mortgage Guys. Stick around.
So Amy was born and raised in Kokomo, Indiana. She graduated from IU with a business degree, and she's been with the Realtors Association of Central Indiana since 2010. Prior to that, she ran Habitat for Humanity of the Kokomo community for 10 years. She currently serves on the following boards: Vice Chair of Community Foundation of Howard County, Greater Kokomo Chamber of Commerce, Greater Kokomo Economic Development Committee, and the Greater Kokomo Economic Development Alliance Board. Amy is happily married with her husband, Nick. They have three kids. Josh, Sarah, and Claire, and two dogs, Curly and Winston. She and Nick love to entertain and frequently host guests at their home with their lake, or at their home and their lake house. Welcome to the show, Amy.
Hey, hi. Welcome.
Yeah, I try my best to read that off. I'm goofing it up, but inevitably I stumble.
At least that we know it's live, right? When it happens.
So we're glad to have you on the show, but I feel like there's something we have to address right up front. I know there's a dog that always follows Nick around. So I guess I didn't realize you had two dogs.
There are two. So Curly is going to be 16 next month, and he's the one who follows Nick around. And then Winston actually comes with me quite often. He's just 4 years old. He's a little schnoodle. So Curly's a Bichon who's ancient. And then Winston's my pal.
There you go.
So Winston go to work with you?
He is here. He's over with Stephanie right now.
office pets.
Would he be on the camera if he was in the room with you?
Oh yeah. He likes right here.
Yep. Every time I record a video at home, my cats hear me and they come running in and they get up there and like,
oh yeah.
Hilarious. Too funny. Well, we are super excited to have you on the show. We like to cover, you know, a variety of content, and there's still a lot of misunderstanding about realtors and their role and how they get paid and how they work and all that good stuff. So we thought, you know what, you're a nice neutral party, right? You're not you're not actively trying to sell yourself. You're representing the realtors in this area. So let's kind of get into, what exactly does a realtor do and why should somebody want to work with one?
Sure. So to actually back up from that, just a tiny bit, is the fact that the state of Indiana gives licenses that are called broker licenses. So a lot of times people say, I got a realtor's license, and there is no such thing as a realtor's license. There's a real estate broker's license, and that's given by the state. So realtor is actually a membership term, and it's actually for real estate brokers and appraisers, if they so choose. And it's really more the tool side of the business, and it's state and national, and then local realtors. They get services from all those. So realtor is actually a membership term, not a license.
Wow. Yeah. Interesting. For like, you know, even with us being in the business, right? Because you always think that. So
you get a real estate license, but not be a realtor.
Correct. So there are a lot of licensees in the state. Some of them have never been realtors. Some of them have it just for property management and maybe don't need the tools that the real estate realtor membership actually gives. But if you're buying and selling real estate in the state of Indiana, it really is advantageous to have the realtor membership, because it not only gives you access to the MLS, but all kinds of other tools that go along with that. And then also our state forms. So when I say state forms, I mean state association, not state of Indiana. So it's really a huge benefit to have forms that are looked over every year and make sure they're up to date and really protect the client as well as the person who's writing the contract for you.
Yeah, good point on that, because you know that's part of that too, right? Things change. Like I know for personally, like we have a CPA to help us with taxes because of the changes of the laws. It's the same thing with the real estate side. Like there's probably countless times that you've seen it in the time you've been in the position you've been in with changes that happen.
Yeah. So every single year, the forms are updated. The commercial forms are not updated quite as frequently as the residential, but every single year we'll have updates. And what they find is, what are things that are coming out in the market that are maybe new problems or things that have been, brought to light that the forms can help smooth that out. And so to make sure that the transaction is good for both the buyer and the seller. So those are updated every year. And then additionally, during COVID, there were all kinds of new forms to help protect everyone in the transaction and also make sure that real estate could continue during that time. There were some states that real estate really shut down, and it was the realtors who made sure that for the state of Indiana that you could still buy and sell property during this time, and it was still considered an essential business. Additionally, I think we all know that supply has been a huge issue in recent years. And so things are just selling like super fast. Well, the speed at which all that was happening was causing a lot of issues for buyers feeling like they could get the property. And then also, so a lot of new forms were developed to help mitigate some of that. And one of the new forms was an escalation clause, which we've never seen. So, those are just some of the examples of the realtors really being proactive and looking what the market needs, how can we better help the consumer navigate these contracts.
So, I see all these designations, right? So there's all these letters behind names. Like how important is that as a consumer? I'm choosing an agent. Should I be looking at that? Does it matter? Is there some designation where an agent can do something for me that they couldn't otherwise do? How's all that work?
So what it really is, so the state of Indiana says every licensee, whether they're a realtor member or not, so any broker, needs continuing education. And that continuing ed is, consider it like the baseline, making sure that you're staying up to date and you're learning. But the designations really show that this agent is looking at being beyond that baseline of really learning and being a better service to their client, whether it be for accredited buyer's agency. We're looking at right now bringing a negotiations class live. So we're hoping that a lot of the realtor members will take that because, better able to negotiate on behalf of their buyers and sellers. So those are all examples of just learning beyond. So it's not that they can do more because the license is what tells you what you can do, but it really is what is the knowledge backing up that license and that person with their experience and their education.
Yeah, that's good. Thanks. And so it gives that same importance, right? Like, so we can get different certifications. I've got one for Veterans Administration with USA Care. So, but same thing, I guess I didn't think about it, but I did. I have to take extra classes for that in order to get that certification. So it is, they're doing a little bit extra, right? Just to try to help know a little bit more about their.
And on that, we do have one for specific for military as well. So.
Yeah,
great to serve that audience as best we can.
Right. And it looks really cool on your business card, too. And you can throw all those letters at the end. There's definitely a handful of them. I have a lot of them. And I never knew what any of them meant.
Yeah.
That's great. So back to the difference between the real estate agent and the realtor. So as a realtor, I've got access to the MLS. That's a big one, right? So if I'm going to try to find homes for my client or want to send them auto updates, I'm going to need that. What about the lock boxes? Is that?
Yeah, that's a service that we at the local association, we actually purchase all the lock boxes for our association and then allow them to be used. And, you know, the good thing about that is the number of agents that use them is very, very high. And if you think about it on your home, if you have just a combo lock box and someone has shown you that house and they've got the little code written at the top of the paper, you know, anyone can see that. And there's no accountability to who's been in and out of the house, whereas our electronic lock boxes say what time and who had access to it. So it's just a lot more secure. If any owner-occupied house, any house, but especially any owner-occupied house, I cannot imagine having just a combo lockbox on.
Good point. That's tracked, like you said. So then you know, five people went in there and the times and that kind of stuff. So
right, absolutely.
Yeah, big security piece there. For somebody looking to list their house instead of just putting their own sign out in front of it.
Yeah.
Think about over the years too. I mean, I remember seeing all these emails over the years of when lock boxes first came out, right? Back in the day when it was like, got to meet the listing agent there to let them in.
Yeah.
To the various types of lock boxes that have changed.
Yeah. I am actually licensed and I actually sold real estate way back in the early 90s. And yeah, I'd have to drive around to every office, pick up keys, do my showings, and drop them all back off. So it is a time-saving feature as well, but for sure the biggest thing is the safety.
Were you 10 years old?
No, I was not.
Different rules? Yeah.
Hey, so quick question. So like, you know, typically, it sounds like a fun job, right? Being a real estate agent, you're going out showing houses and doing all that stuff. So like if somebody's interested in doing that, what's the process? Like if somebody's like, hey, I think I'd like to dabble in that. Do they call you? Who do they call?
So actually, we refer people to RECP, Real Estate Certification Program. That's our state-owned education. You can get education for pre-licensing other places, but they do just an excellent job of making sure that people are prepared to take the test. So there's a 90-hour course. You do have to take a test from that course and pass, I think, at least 75% to even be able to sit for the state exam. And the state exam actually has a national component and a state component. And I will say a lot of times people do have to take it multiple times. It is not an easy test. But once you're licensed, then you apply to the state of Indiana for someone to hold your license. When you become a broker in the state of Indiana, you cannot hold your own license. You have to be under someone else for a minimum of 2 years. And then to hold your own license, you do have to take an additional course to become what they call managing broker eligible. So once you take your initial pre-licensing class and apply for your license, you do have to be under a managing broker. And, you know, my feeling is if you're serious about being in the business, you need to be with a broker who is a realtor member, and also for yourself, get realtor membership. So that you do have all the tools. I will say oftentimes people start in this business as a part-time business, but it is essential that you prioritize whether you're going into it full-time, part-time, or as a second income, or as a primary income, that you really look at what your intentions are to making it a viable business for yourself. So most, if not, I mean, a large majority of agents are independent contractors, which means you're in charge of your own destiny. No one's telling you what time to show up and do what. Obviously, a lot of managing brokers are really good at coaching you and teaching and giving you some structure to your business. But ultimately, that is on you to make this business work. And, you know, if you just watch HGTV, all the homes are beautiful and everyone's nice. And, you know, it can be a hard business to be in. So even though the barrier to entry into the business is not great, it's a pretty affordable business when you look at starting, you know, businesses across the board. You know, you can start a real estate, but, you know, your real estate career pretty relatively inexpensively. But it really is that time and effort and tenacity to make it work that ultimately is going to determine whether you make it a viable business. So, you know, my suggestion is to not only, once you get that, is to make a plan and get with a broker that's going to train you. Because there are some brokerages have different business models, and some have a lot of that built into it, and some do not.
Right. So it's like getting a coach. They're mm-hmm. your broker, but they're your mentor coach trying to help you through that process.
Yeah.
How many new realtors do you think you're on average seeing coming into this market? So like Racy, for those that don't know, you're what, six counties?
We are. We're six counties. And then we're part of a regional MLS, and we also have people that are a part of other associations that participate in our MLS through us. So they don't have realtor membership, but they do have realtor membership somewhere and get MLS up from us as a secondary service. But we've got about 500 primary agents in our six counties. And if you consider our counties and how rural some of those are, you know, that can sound like a lot or not a lot, depending on where you're thinking about. But we cover, as a primary jurisdiction, Howard, Tipton, Miami, Cass, Grant, and Wabash counties. So, you know, 500 realtors across that area. And with how tight the inventory has been, you know, it definitely is a challenge.
All right. And before we get into some statistics, I want to talk about like the common thing about maybe some misunderstandings. You know, we titled this The Truth About Realtors, right? Mm-hmm. As a consumer, if you're thinking about buying a home, I think it's important to understand that you can have one realtor that represents you that can show you these properties. Because of the MLS system that you guys have, because of the lock boxes we talk about, you can establish a relationship with one agent that can show you any property, right? I just feel like that's not, it's misunderstood.
People. Yeah, so it really... And it can be a big challenge, because oftentimes the realtor, you know, thinks that you guys are working together to find them a home, and then come to find out you're also talking to multiple other people. You know, that loyalty and working with one person is really, really important, because they're working hard to find you a home. And it's you know, it to be invested in that one relationship and making sure that you're communicating well is vital. And also on the listing side, you know, right now, a lot of people are saying, well, I can sell my home in like a minute, you know, especially last year, even more so than this year.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of people are like, why do I need an agent? Well, the reality is selling your home, finding a willing buyer is like this much work of the transaction. There are negotiating pieces all along the transaction and things to push through to get you to the closing table. So a lot of times people think, you know, I can find a buyer for my home in a minute. Why do I need someone to represent me? And that's because the transactions can be quite difficult to move through. You know, you've got inspections, you've got, all kinds of contract details
and title work.
Having a contract at all that protects you, you know, that comes from our members. That's a member benefit. That's not a state form. So having a good contract, you know, that in and of itself is huge. and having someone negotiate through that whole process. Because as you guys know, on the mortgage side, sometimes things come up and dealing with those. And then this past year, you know, dealing with appraisal gaps and what's going to happen with that. So, you know, there are all kinds of things to work through beyond finding, oh, I found some guy that's going to buy my house.
Amy, here, everything's 100% smooth all the time. There's never hiccups in the deal.
But you're true. We had Margaret on for Metro last week, and she was some horror stories, you know, of some things that happened with people that didn't work the proper process, right? Mm-hmm. Tried to take that shortcut to save money, end up costing them thousands and thousands.
Yeah. You know, and our members have the latest numbers on, you know, what your property's worth. And, you know, sometimes people say, well, I'm going to ask a lot more than I think, than maybe someone's saying it's worth. And that really can shoot yourself in the foot as well. So really having some good guidance on, you know, pricing your home, getting it ready for showings, you know, doing some pre-listing activities to make sure that that you're getting, you know, the best look at your home, and then marketing the home. So even though it may or may not sell quickly, depending on, you know, all the market conditions, is, you know, making sure you're marketing that home and driving the best buyer to the property.
Yeah. So did you bring any statistics to share? You don't have
to. Well, I did just a tiny bit. I don't want to bog you guys down a ton, but you know, I will say that, you know, the big conversation has been the availability of homes and for sale. And, you know, I think there's even a little bit more going on with that that I'll speak to. So currently we have 75 active listings in Howard County, 42 contingent. So that's 117 that are available to be seen in some sort of way, but only 75 of those have no offers on them. And then we have 71 pending. So when I talk about contingent, the most common contingency is it's basically has an offer, but they're accepting backup offers. So it may not be like a first right or something like that. It's usually contingent accepting backup offers and really looking at, you know, if this buyer that's made the offer falls through, who then can be kind of a second in line. Whereas, you know, a first right would be, hey, someone else has come in, the buyer number one has to make the choice to either make the move or not. So there's a couple different types of things going on with those. That when you look at days on the market, both active and contingent do accumulate days on the market. So when we take a look at days on the market, sometimes they feel just a little bit higher than what you may feel like's going on in the market. And that is because some of those listings have offers on them. They're accepting backup offers. So they're still showing as in that pool of availability and adding up those days in the market. It's not until it goes to pending that days in the market stops.
Yeah, although there could have been an offer on it prior to, like you said, they're just continuing to accept some offers on it.
Right. So at that, we're looking at about what they, you know, if you look at market absorption rates, which is a fancy term of saying if no more houses went on the market, how long would it be before all of these houses that are currently on would be sold? Just by numbers, not by all the other amenities. So 2 months is what we're currently sitting at. And that's still very, very much a seller's market. So six months of inventory is considered like fully neutral. So it's still definitely a seller's market, but it's not as bad as it was. And I will say last year, when there were a lot of people that were to get a house, were waiving things like inspections, you know, that I would never recommend. You know, you just really need to understand what you're investing your money in. And if a deal is not going to go through without waiving the inspections, what you can do is not make it contingent on inspections, but still get one. So you still know what you're getting into. But I would never buy a house that I was going to live in without getting an inspection. So, you know, it's nice that we are now seeing a little softening of that market condition where the sellers had the absolute upper hand. It's softened a little bit, and now we're getting into more, a little more balanced negotiation, even though it is still a seller's market.
And then, and hopefully at that same point, the inventory continues to grow a little bit, which can help that whole piece. If we can get into 90 days or 4 months worth of inventory, that's going to help us quite a bit as well.
Yeah. So one of the things that's interesting that I've heard some people say is, you know, it used to be that, you know, people would just decide, oh, I'm going to move to a different neighborhood, or, you know, a bigger house or a smaller house. And now with the rates changing, which I'm going to kick the ball over to you guys, is that sometimes people are saying, you know, I've got a 2.5% mortgage. You know, it's going to take a lot for me to want to move, which is still going to affect the number of houses on the market. So, you know, there are always people that need to move for whatever reason or really just want to. But I do think for those people that were in that boat of, I might move, might be rethinking that a little bit just because they're sitting on a really good rate. So I'm going to kick it over to you guys and just say, you know, what are you seeing on that front with not only the rates, but also people's decision to sell and buy.
And buy. Hey, I'll start, Ryan. I'll go like on that position of where they're at, because we've got actually a few people in our pipeline right now that they're at less than 3% on their current rate, but they're actually pre-approved to buy another house. And it's family size on a couple of them that they're outgrowing where they're at. And then also at that same point when they're in the house they were in, their income has changed. So they actually, although the rates are a little bit higher now, their affordability of what they're looking for, it's not affecting as much. And then Ryan can hit on a little bit more on the rate side of what we're trying to educate everybody with, that it's not going to be for 30 years when you're with it. But yeah, if it's something where it's that really good house, rate's really not going to matter. The people are going to want to get that house to be into it.
You know, yeah. We've all done this for a long time and we've seen market changes, but the last year, I mean, last year, holy cow, right? From January to the end of the year, going from 3% to 7%. That was a crazy rate swing in a short period of time that I never thought we'd see. And it was 100% caused by the feds. I mean, the government's purposefully trying to slow down spending.
Yeah.
You know, and unfortunately, in the mortgage and real estate industry, we've kind of become collateral damage to that. It has had an impact, because like to your point, Amy, people that are at 2.5% rates looking at buying today going, what's your rate again? Like, they can't get their brain wrapped around it. Mm-hmm. There's some light at the end of the tunnel. I think that they significantly overshot, as they typically do in anything. And there's a lot of industry professionals who really follow the charts and really understand what motivates rates and what moves rates. There's a lot of belief that we'll see these rates come back down. And I think a lot of people just wanted to see where it was going to go and like, is it going to stop? And like, they don't want to be shopping in an increased rate environment because it's too many concerns, right? And unknowns.
Yeah.
So I think there's some light in the tunnel. We're prepping our clients, anyone who's buying a home this year, that we're giving them mortgages. We want to make sure they're comfortable with it. They can handle the payments. And we're trying to give them a little hope that there's a good possibility that the market will dip at some point in the future. When that happens, you know, we pay the mortgage off, right? And we put them into a lower interest rate.
Yeah.
Save them some money.
Well, yeah. And, you know, and really historically, we're still at good rates. That's the reality that people are forgetting. Yeah. This is not a horrible rate environment. It's just basically anyone who's been in this business for a long time was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe how low the rates are. And
right.
Now it's like, yeah. It's a little more normalized. But you're right, that was, you know, purposeful from the Fed standpoint of slowing the roll.
Right.
Yeah.
It's all part of that puzzle that, like Ryan said, we're in it as collateral damage of what it is, but we've been through this before. And, you know, now we're, like you said, there's different forms. We're learning a little bit more things, like last year, escalation clauses that we had to mm-hmm. do, 2-1 buy downs on interest rates, new forms that we've not done. But hey, the education piece there for anybody that's listening is strong. With the state side of the association that Ryan and I have been around for years with it. So good job keeping everything rolling out there.
Yeah. And the nice thing about working with a realtor is as rates change, they're able to very quickly communicate, and especially with a local lender, we always suggest people use, you know, people in your communities that you can talk to. And as things change, they can regroup, because that can affect your buying power when, especially in a rising rate environment.
So. For sure. 100%. Awesome. Amy, thanks so much for being on. We appreciate it. That covered a lot of good stuff. And we picked up some stuff too, which is always good for us when we can try to help sharpen ourselves as well with it. So if you guys liked what you heard, if you got any questions, put them down in there. But like, share this thing. And Amy, thanks again.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for being on, Amy. All right. So next week, we're going to be doing another community spotlight. We'll be interviewing Byron Haverstick. He's the Assistant Scout Executive with the Sagamore Council, Boy Scouts of America. We'll be talking about how a family can get involved in scouting, their outreach programs, partnership opportunities, and more. Be sure to watch us next Tuesday at noon.